are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, and welcome to Inside School Food, a forum for professionals and advocates working in, with, around K-12 food service. I'm your host, Laura Stanley, and I'm here to help you dig deep into current topics in school food. I'm very pleased to have with me today two of the most progressive and accomplished food service directors working in schools today, Bertrand Weber of Minneapolis Public Schools and Geeta Grether-Sweeney of Portland, Oregon Public Schools. I'll be speaking with them shortly about challenges involved in introducing the new meal patterns for school lunch that are required under the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act of 2010. We'll be looking in particular at the considerable financial challenges involved in getting significantly more produce and whole grains onto the tray. But first, let's take a quick look at some recent news in school food. What I have today is a tale of two studies. One that grabbed headlines when it was released early this year in January, and the second less publicized when it came out in early March. The earlier study from the Government Accountability Office is not a bearer of great news about the new meal pattern for school lunch. The GAO reports a decrease in participation of 3.7% between 2010 and 2013, due, they say, mainly to a drop in sales of full-price meals. Now, this is happening after many years of steady increase in participation. Why is this happening? GAO concludes that the new whole grain and fruit and veggie-rich menus have been less popular with kids and high school students in particular. Higher prices for full-price meals appear to play a role as well, especially for those families with incomes that are just slightly above where they need to be to qualify for reduced price. Additionally, most states and most of the districts visited by researchers reported increased food waste. Other issues identified by GAO included a big jump in food cost, which we'll be talking about shortly, and a bigger workload for staff due to preparation of all those fruits and vegetables. Many districts are under-equipped and will require new investment in their kitchens and storage systems. But how bad is all this, really? GAO says that, in fact, many of these setbacks are actually issues that were anticipated and that will diminish over time as students and food service alike adjust to the new normal. That's not to dismiss the work that lies ahead as easy. GAO makes it clear it will not be. But the report, if you really read it, and I did, it's 70 pages, it's not grim in the way much of the mainstream media led Americans to believe. Here's one sample headline from the Washington Times, which said, 1 million kids stopped school lunch due to Michelle Obama's standards. Really? First of all, the new standards aren't the First Lady's, though she came out strongly in favor of them. And in fact, the 2010 Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act had strong bipartisan support. The second study from researchers at the Harvard School of Public Health makes for more encouraging headlines. Here's one from USA Today. It says, some kids eat more veggies with new school lunch rules. But, oops, the subhead read, students eat more produce at school but also throw a lot of it away. And it's true. Students at four low-income urban schools were found to be taking more fruits and vegetables after the implementation of the new meal pattern without throwing away any more than they used to. That means they're eating more produce. That's good. But they're still throwing away up to 75% of the vegetables on their trays and about 40% of the fruit. And that's pretty bad. I think the Washington Post, not to be confused with the Washington Times, summed it up best with the headline on its recent article about both reports. It said, two new studies underscore hope, frustrations of revamped school lunches. I think that says it all. With all this in mind, I'm very pleased to have with me these two ace problem solvers to take on the matter of food cost. Bertrand and Geeta, welcome to Heritage Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to ask you both to describe your programs in brief. I don't know who wants to start. Should we move from east to west, or should it be ladies first?
Go ahead.
East to west. Gita. Bertrand, you go.
Okay, go ahead, Bertrand.
So Minneapolis Public School is actually currently increasing in size, which is wonderful for an urban district. So we're currently at approximately 36,000 students. Our demographics, free and reduced, accounts for about 64% of our student population. A high number, but not extremely high as compared to some of the other urban areas. And our challenge within our school district is the district back in 1975 opted to go into a prepack operation. So all schools built after 75 did not include kitchens or dining rooms, and schools that were built prior to that didn't have them either because kids went home. And we're in the midst right now of actually changing our delivery model and putting kitchen back into school. So we have a very diversified, if you will, delivery model. High schools do 60% of their cooking on site, with some bulk item coming from the central kitchen. Mm-hmm. We have just converted four junior highs, in the process of converting junior highs with the same principle, and those are with some very, very limited kitchen. We have four elementary schools that have brand new kitchens, but the rest of the 41 elementary schools don't have kitchens and are on full prepack using rethermalizers. Mm-hmm. But we were able to install 26 salad bars within the district. So we're kind of all over the place when it comes to our food system delivery.
Mm-hmm. But you are in a uniquely advantageous position in that you were installing these new facilities knowing what was coming with the new meal pattern. Can you talk about how that's facilitated your adjustment to the new pattern?
The thought behind the changes really were not as a result of the new regulation, but the timing for our district was probably worked in our favor, because as the new regulations were introduced, we took our high school students from basically a fast food environment into fresh food environment with salad bars. So to them, the introduction of a salad bar, they automatically took the extra fruits and vegetable without even us having to ask, because what they had in the pack was plastic baggies of carrots or celery and oranges. So it really worked in our favor. Our participation is actually up by 1.4% from last year. And overall participation of the district is up by 9% over 2 years ago.
Wow, so you're really bucking the national trend there. That's really exciting.
Yep. But and again, I think it's just coincidence. It had nothing to do with the new regs. It really had to do with there's such a drastic change in the way we started presenting food and the way we started marketing food in schools that it went hand in hand with the new regulations, and the kid just embraced it.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that, the presentation and the marketing?
So we really tried to focus, even in the schools that are still on prepack, we really tried to focus on presenting the food or marketing the food, not so much as school food, but really trying to present a pleasant dining experience, great, what we call true food. Our campaign is called is True Food Rocks, and actually kids came up with that name. And true food is nothing more than just as little processed food as possible and more wholesome, what we call just whole food.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really, as we increase that, we're doing taste tests with some different kind of food, introducing whole grain in their whole form, as opposed to trying to hide them in, not hide them, but, you know, chicken nuggets have to be whole grain. I'm not quite sure that's where the whole grain belongs, mm-hmm. but that's just a personal opinion. So we, on the salad bar, we put in quinoa salad and tabbouleh and wheat berries, and with a lot of marketing behind it, and that seems to have worked very well. We also, as I mentioned, we conduct a taste test, and we've grown from 14 schools, we're up to now 27 schools that have, where we conduct taste tests of legume salads and some of the new challenge that we have with the new regulations, mm-hmm. with the different colored vegetables and the legumes and the grain. So that's where we kind of take the opportunity to introduce those new foods during taste tests. And that not only has worked well with the kids, but ironically, we see our website traffic more than quadruple the day after because parents are downloading recipes, which kind of gives us, we know that we're going in the right direction when we're seeing the parents that are now also embracing some of those changes.
Well, and that's exciting, having the recipes that I guess, assuming that you're scaling them down for home use, that's not
yep.
something that your district does.
Yeah, we go from 20,000 serving to 8. So.
That's great. And I know you're doing some really innovative purchasing of some sustainably or locally grown foods. Can you just mention a couple of examples that you're excited about?
The, you know, the hardest ones for us have been the protein, but we've been partnering now with a local free-range family farm that raises turkey. So all of our turkey, raw turkey products, so we use ground turkey, we use turkey thigh meat, his turkey hot dogs, all come from 30 miles from the Twin Cities, from a family farm, turkeys that are raised without the use of antibiotic, that are fully free range, and we have a great connection, and it's like we know where our food comes from. We've done the same thing with a local grass-fed beef company for grass-fed beef hot dogs, mm-hmm. so we kind of alternate between the two. We do serve a local poultry, but it's still part of a larger company. It's more of a Midwest kind of company. Mm-hmm. And then we're, I think some of the really neat things is working with some of the smaller farms around the Twin Cities. And with some of the new immigrant farmers, so we've partnered with them on quite a few items, and we're hoping to triple that for next year.
Yeah, yeah.
And one of the other thing too is we started partnering with a lot of local chefs in recipe development and promotion when we're talking about some of the taste tests. So the chefs come in and help us with the kids. But through that connection with the chef, we've had opportunities from a farmer that was working with a local restaurant where their crop got hit by hail.
Mm-hmm.
And they had sent an email to some of the restaurant about, is anybody interested in hail damage tomatoes and kale? And our connection with the chef council forwarded us that email, and we actually purchased the entire crop of kale and used it in this fall in an apple kale salad at half the cost as regular kale, and this was local organically grown kale. So some of those, I think, are a lot of fun to share.
That's
everybody
great.
Wins.
And
yeah.
And you've been able to do it on your very restricted budget. And I know that Geeta's done some of this kind of work, too. So I'll turn it over to you, Geeta. First, why don't you tell us a little bit about your district, and then we'll see what you're proud of.
Okay. So I have some similarities and some differences with Bertrand as far as our district makeup. We have approximately 47,000 students who attend Portland Public Schools, and our demographics are lower as far as for free and reduced as Bertrand's. We're only at 46% free and reduced. We have on-site cooking at 85 of our kitchen sites, which is that's how many sites we have. We used to have a central kitchen and moved away from that model about 6 to 7 years ago. One of our challenges with that, though, is that we only have ovens in our kitchens to cook with. So we don't have braisers or stoves, any other type of equipment, just ovens. But we've been able to make that work fairly well for us. And so we do have a central distribution, which helps us quite a bit, which means that all of our food is delivered from either farmers, vendors, to our central distribution site warehouse, and then we deliver the food out to the schools. And one of the reasons we've kept that model is because our schools are quite old. The average age is 65 years. And so we have limited refrigeration and freezer space, and so some schools can't hold more than a couple of days' worth of groceries. So that's one of the reasons we've kept the model of the central distribution. However, that helps us food cost-wise because vendors only have to deliver to one site, and then we make the distribution elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit about the makeup of our district.
And so let's talk a little bit about your menus. You know, Bertrand was talking about the relationship he's got with the turkey producer and the beef and local farms. I know you're also a real pioneer in that area. You mm-hmm. want to give us a few examples?
Sure. So a number of years ago, we started making some changes to our menu, similar to what Bertrand was speaking to, moving away from less processed food and making more of the food on site at our schools. And so the first thing we did is we moved away from our central kitchen, but we started a Harvest of the Month program where we feature Oregon-produced fruits or vegetables at the school sites, trying to teach the kids where their food comes from, and specifically Oregon, because Oregon, we grow so many fruits and vegetables, and a lot of kids don't realize, you know, what is grown here in Oregon. So we started that program, and then also a local lunch program where the lunch for the day, all the food that we purchase is regional. It may not all be Oregon, but it's regional. And so through that, we've established a number of partnerships with local processors and farmers. One of the ranchers that we've made a partnership with is Carmen Ranch, and they're in located in eastern Oregon. And Corey Carmen has a cattle ranch and raises beef, and they're 100% grass-fed. And so we feature the hamburger on our menus twice a year through this local lunch. And then we also purchase local chicken that's antibiotic-free. That's something that I've been working towards in our district. And we menu that just a few times a year. And the main reason we only menu these items a few times a year is because of the cost. They are quite expensive, but we would like to move our, you know, the foods that we buy in that direction. So we try to offer them a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. So those are two big programs that we initiated a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know you're doing so much, Geeta, and I could devote both of you. I could devote a whole show to your farm to school purchasing, and maybe we'll do that another time because you're just skimming the surface, both of you here. I would like to, before we go to station break, just very quickly describe the changes underway with the lunch meal pattern. And I wondered if either one of you wanted to try, it's complicated, but if either of you wanted to try taking this on in broad strokes, describe what it looked like before and what changes are required of you now.
Okay, I'll take a stab and mm-hmm. Bertrand can, you know, follow up if he
sure.
would like. So 2 years ago, some of the changes took place. One of them being that we have to serve a half a cup of fruit or vegetable to all students. In the past, we were able to just offer that to students, and students were able to take it or not take it. Mm-hmm. And now it's a requirement to be on their plate. And so that's one of the challenges that have come up, specifically in our case, just because of old schools, and I can talk more about that. Mm-hmm. The other change, we have to serve 100% whole grains, so any of the grains we serve are whole grain. So that would mean all our bread products, our pasta. Pasta has been the biggest challenge because vendors don't necessarily carry all those products. Our pizza, tortillas, anything that's a bread grain has to be whole grain. And so there are some items that have been a little bit challenging because they're not available on the market. Mm-hmm. Other things have been on the market, like the bread products, for years, and so that hasn't been a big issue. And another one that has been a little challenging for us is also the sodium targets that we have to meet. And they're implemented in three different stages. And the first one will be for next school year, where there's a level that we have to meet as far as the sodium content. So, for example, for the middle school kids, the lunch can't have more than 1,360 milligrams of sodium.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's been another challenge that in the new regulations,
right,
that have come about that we're working with.
Well,
Bertrand, do you want? Oh.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the portioning requirements are so very specific, and there's three different categories, which really complicates your life, I'm sure.
I was going to jump on that if we have time. And Gita mentioned serving half a cup and fresh fruits and vegetable, but the regulation actually also calls that we have to offer a cup. So when in a pre-pack environment, mm-hmm, means that I have to have a, you know, and a salad bar is okay. In a pre-pack, I have to make sure that the fruits and vegetables are offered, that there is the minimum of one cup offered, and they have to take half a cup.
Right.
Mm-hmm. In our area, too, very challenging. We have a lot of K-8 schools, which means that they have two standards that we've got to follow. Yet, we have one delivery system in those schools, which is a prepack.
Mm-hmm.
So our menus have to meet the, cannot be over the maximum of a K-5, and have to meet the minimum of the 6-8. So for the calorie, for example, it gives us only a window of about 50 calories.
Mm-hmm.
And the sad thing is, you know, it's really complicated things from a sodium perspective, from a calorie perspective, from a portion size perspective, because we can't satisfy those older kids because we're above the the maximum of the little kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and same as Gita, we're seeing a lot of, or what you mentioned earlier, some of these schools still have what they call share tables, and we see mounting portions of wrapped fruits and vegetables on those tables just because the kids have to take them.
Right, right. We'll talk about that in the second half, about cost and waste. Before we go to station break, I just wanted to tell our listeners that there is a fantastic infographic on page 8 of the GAO report that makes really clear what Gita and Bertrand are talking about with regard to the portion sizes. So if you just Google GAO school lunch report and make sure you're looking at the 2014 report, go to page 8. It is very useful, and it's at a glance, because without that, this can be rather daunting to understand. So with that, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to launch into talking about some of the problems with regard to cost.
On my back, hard in my eyes, bruised on my lips, it's no big surprise, it's you.
Today's break song is called It's You by Lily Virginia. This is HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Keep it from going away. Welcome back to Inside School Food. My name is Laura Stanley, and I'm here with two directors of large school districts, Bertrand Weber from Minneapolis Public Schools and Geeta Grether-Sweeney from Portland, Oregon Public Schools. We're talking about challenges involved with the new meal pattern for school lunches, and specifically we're going to be talking in the next 10 minutes about cost. So, Geeta, when we spoke about this last, we talked about that extra 6 cents. Can you explain what that means and what it gets you?
Sure. So with the new regulations, one of the things that took part in that or and was involved with that is that we have to get our menus approved through the state to make sure that we are complying with all the new regulations. And if we pass that review, then we're approved for an extra 6 cents per lunch. And so we appreciate every cent and quarter cent that we receive from the government for our meals because it helps us to break even in our departments. But the 6 cents really reflects one-third of an apple. And so when you picture that, that's not a lot of food or that 6 cents really buys us. And so that's been a bit of a challenge for us, especially with the quantity, as Bertrand mentioned earlier, that we have to serve. And the 6 cents just doesn't really go as far as or stretch as far as we would hope it would.
Right, right. And Geeta, what, approximately how much do you have to spend per lunch total?
So, each district is a little bit different. Our food costs in Portland run about $1.35 per meal.
And what is the total budget for a meal, including your overhead costs, your labor, et cetera?
So we receive, including the 6 cents, because we were approved for that, we receive $3.01 for every lunch that we serve. So a little bit, about half or so, a little bit less than half, goes to the cost of the food, and then the other half has to cover labor cost, benefits, and equipment, any expense that would come out of our department.
And as you mentioned, you are expected to break even.
We are expected in our district to break even, so we don't receive any money from the general fund.
Right.
What we receive for reimbursement for the meals we serve is what we have to survive on, and it's a business.
And Bertrand, what is your what are you receiving per lunch?
Well, we receive the same as Geeta. That's pretty much. It's very similar, and the federal reimbursement is the same. State varies a little bit, but we receive about the same. And ironically, our food cost is also at $1.35. So, but here's something that's interesting: is we implemented the breakfast. Don't ask me why, but we went that direction. We implemented the breakfast regulations this year. That are effective starting next school year, and we saw our breakfast food costs just soar because of the required fruit component at breakfast that now they must take a fruit as well. So I know that everyone will be facing this next year, but the breakfast one was is a very large one.
Right, right. Well, and that speaks to what I was talking about earlier with regard to the GAO report and skyrocketing costs for fruits and vegetables. Geeta, what are your increased produce costs looking like, and how are you dealing with it?
So we're spending probably at least a third more on produce than we have in the past. Our produce bill is very high, and part of that is because we do purchase a lot of fresh produce, and then we cook it. We buy very little frozen or canned, and so that does impact our cost. As far as fruits go, we do offer a canned fruit every day, but we also offer a fresh fruit at least one a day. So the produce costs have to answer your question, have gone up quite a bit.
So how are you coping? And are there other places where you can cut corners to make this happen and still break even?
So we look at all sorts of different ways internally. How can we operate more efficiently? Whether it's our distribution of the product, our labor, we really manage our labor very closely to make sure that we stay within our labor cost, and that's monitored on a monthly basis, or really weekly, and then reported on a monthly basis by our program managers. One of the biggest things that we've done out of the schools, like I mentioned, we have old schools, and we've had salad bars in the school since 1995. But with the new regulation, in the past, what kids would do is go through the service line, and the salad bar would be after the point of sale where mm-hmm. the meal was claimed for reimbursement. And then the kids could just select, you know, how many fruit, you know, the fruits and vegetables that they wanted. So when the new regulations came on board, we had to offer some of those fruits and vegetables on the line and out on the salad bars. And so we saw an increase in cost there because kids would take it both places. So in schools where we have long enough service lines, we've moved all the offerings that are on the salad bar into the serving area. So that the kids can select before they get to the point of sale. Mm-hmm. And that has helped us quite a bit in decreasing our costs for the fruits and vegetables.
Right, right. But you're still needing to buy more, and kids aren't necessarily eating those fruits and vegetables.
No, and I actually witnessed this yesterday with parents I had taken to lunch at a school, and they were just appalled at how kids would go through the serving line, and literally, I mean, it was yesterday happened to be grapefruit, and the kids would throw the grapefruit in the garbage before they ever sat down. Mm-hmm. And the grapefruit are not the grapefruit that we used to eat when we were young that, you know, we needed sugar on it. These were nice, sweet grapefruit, mm-hmm. but they did not want to eat it. And so the more they can self-select, the better it is. But even at that, when they are forced to have to take the fruit or vegetable, mm-hmm. they don't like that even at the elementary level.
Right. So the required serving isn't necessarily the way to win their hearts, you know, with regard to fruits and vegetables.
Right.
Right, right.
Yeah, letting them self-select is a much better option.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I think we're encountering the same issue with the whole grain issue. And I'm by all means not against whole grain, but whole grain has a place in some areas. Mm-hmm. And I know Gita mentioned the pasta. We're finding kids are, I don't want to say they're rebelling, but half of those pasta made with whole grains are terrible. Mm-hmm. And so we're not accomplishing anything. We're pushing kids away from certain food just because now they all have to be whole grain.
Right.
And that's a challenge, too. And, you know, our cost is going up in those as manufacturers have to reformulate all of their product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, I joked earlier, but even all of the breadings on anything have to be made with whole grain-rich products.
Right, right.
So it's affecting everything.
Well, and children especially are notoriously neophobic, so that's part of what you're dealing with is just adjustment, and let's hope that it's more that than anything else over time, as the GAO suggests. But that remains to be seen, doesn't it? Gita, unlike Minneapolis, Portland has lost some income due to decreased participation, and yet very recently you're seeing an uptick. You know, what do you think, or is it too early to say?
Well, yes, we were so excited because this last month, and we saw a slight increase of 0.6%, and so I'm anxious to see the current month's participation. We have been, unfortunately, experiencing about a 4% decrease the last couple of years, so I'm hopeful when we saw this increase last month that that's going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, you know, since we've made the menu changes over the last few years, I was surprised to see the decrease, even with the new regulations. But I'm hoping, like I said, with the increase that we saw this last month, that trend will continue.
Right, right. Well, we look forward to checking in with you again. Give it some more months and see if if it does continue, Gita. Well, we need to wrap up now, but I was really excited to have both of you with us today on Inside School Food, and I look forward to catching up with you going forward to talk about other issues with regard to the new meal pattern. Bertrand talked about breakfast, so that's another hot topic that we're going to be looking at going forward. But thank you both.
Thank you so much for having us on.
All right.
Yeah, thank you for having us on.
Our pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go to the hospital.